This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of March 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 8th of March, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. We start with the announcements this week and with what's on. We're going to start with information about an e-book and e-audio book surgery at the Winchester Discovery Centre, which may interest those of you who are lucky enough to have some e-readers. There's a free e-book and e-audiobook service provided by Hampshire Library Service, and they're running a special surgery to find out everything you need to know about getting started and about downloading digital books and digital audiobooks for free. The next one is on Friday the 15th of March. That's Friday the 15th of March, 9:30 to 11:30 at the Discovery Centre. It's a surgery on audio e-books. And it's free. If you want more information, you can telephone the Winchester Discovery Centre on 01962 873 603. That's 873 603. If you're interested in that, Friday the 15th of March. If you can't make that one, there's another one on the 19th of April, 17th of May and 21st of June. But particularly important as it's only next week, Friday the 15th of March may be appropriate for you. Now, what else is on? The Military Wives are at the Anvil at Basingstoke on Saturday the 16th of March at 7:45 p.m. This is one of 75 Military Wives choirs now, and they're performing for further development of choirs and for the Help for Heroes charity. It's at 7:45 p.m. It's at the Anvil at Basingstoke. Tickets are £19.50. You can telephone 01256 844 244, but I did check online yesterday. There weren't many tickets left available, but you may be lucky enough to get some. Lastly, at the Theatre Royal Winchester, on Friday and Saturday, the 15th and 16th of March at 8 p.m, is Puccini's La Boheme. For tickets and information, Theatre Royal Winchester is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 8th of March at 6:35 a.m. and begins at 5:59 p.m. And on Wednesday the 13th of March, it ends at 6:24 a.m. and begins at 6:08 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And don't forget, if you don't wish to listen to any particular item on this recording, just skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. Now, the main headlines this week: bedroom tax to hit 500 homes, and one down, eight lives left. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is bedroom tax to hit 500 homes. Nearly 500 homes in Winchester will be hit by a controversial scheme aimed at cutting housing waiting lists, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The government's so-called bedroom tax aims to move families into homes with more room at the expense of people occupying homes with more bedrooms than they need. But some say it will hit the pockets of Winchester's poorest households or force them to move out. The bedroom tax will cut housing benefit for people living in council or social housing by the number of spare bedrooms in their homes. An estimated total of 5,582 households across Hampshire are likely to be affected by the bedroom tax, with 490 in Winchester. People living in homes with one spare bedroom will see their benefits cut by 14% of the total rent paid per week. Labour City Councillor Chris Pines, who represents Winnall and Highcliffe, said, "I'm almost at a loss for words at this. It's disgusting. It penalises the poorest of the poor. If people have to move out of their properties now because they cannot afford it without the benefits, where are they going to go? We have a housing waiting list of 3,600 and house, on average, around 300 per year. So are these people going to skewer the waiting list, making it even harder for everyone else? It means if a family has rent of £115 a week and one spare bedroom, they will lose £16.10. Meanwhile, if a family has two spare bedrooms, they would have their benefits cut by 25%, losing £28.75. Councillor Pines added, "Those moving are not going to be in the same estate as their families and their children's schools, and they will be further away from their jobs, so their lives are going to be screwed up. This will put a huge burden on the housing officers, who will have to manage this. We are preparing for that and looking at getting extra officers taken on. We're going to be spending an awful lot of money on new officers and trying to manage and help these people. Local authorities are advising tenants to compensate for the financial blow by increasing their income, taking in lodgers or moving to smaller houses. The scheme is targeted at those residents who are of working age, so pensioners currently in housing association or council homes will not be affected. Opponents say the tax, which is being introduced on April 1st, will leave affected families with less money to live on. Leslie Rose, acting chief executive at Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau, said it was trying to identify clients who would be affected when it comes into force in April. She said, "I do not know how many people are going to find themselves in this position." Tenants with disabilities will also be subject to the penalty unless a bedroom is used by non-resident carer who stays overnight. And faced with a change to council tax benefits, meaning the poorest households in the country will be forced to pay council tax for the first time, some are warning that many face a double impact on their bills from April onwards. The government says the tax will move people from homes which are too big so people in overcrowded accommodation can have more space and cut the cost of welfare.
Thank you, Nikki. And I should have introduced our readers at the start, and I apologise for omitting to do that. That was Nikki. Now we're going to follow on with Graham.
Hello.
And then later on reading with us will be Albie.
Hello.
Graham, can you come over with the other headline, please?
I will, yes, thank you. One down, eight lives left. Yes, it's a cat. A rather splendid tabby cat on a very large picture on the front of the Chronicle with his owner holding him up. And he's looking straight into camera, and I think the cat is saying, "No press, please, see my agent," because he looks very self-satisfied. The article itself is headed, "The Day Boris the Tabby Hitched a Lift in a Car." A convertible purred as it cruised down the motorway last week, but for all the wrong reasons. 11-month-old tabby cat Boris survived a 30-minute journey from Winchester to Burslington under the bonnet of a blue Audi A3 on Friday night. Owner Russ Brimfield, aged 34, said he was shocked when he got a phone call the next morning from drivers Lucy and Andrew Mayrig, telling him Boris was with them. Mr. Brimfield, of Upper Brook Street, Winchester, said, "I'd been out with my housemates the night before. I thought something was not right on Saturday morning, as Boris is usually around, but I thought he might be asleep upstairs, so I went to work." Excuse me. "Then I got a call from Lucy and Andrew telling me Boris was safe with them in Burslington, and I was shocked. It appears Boris crawled into the car when it was parked in Middle Brook Street on Friday night, while Lucy and Andrew were visiting friends. Mr. Brimfield, who runs a fruit and vegetable business, added, "I don't know if he's an adrenaline junkie or just an absolute idiot. He was a nervous wreck, but there's not a scratch on him, and the only difference is that he's been extremely needy over the past couple of days. But I think he's used up all nine lives in one go." Lucy, age 36, said they discovered him after they heard meowing after parking in their garage in Old Burslington. She said, "We heard a cat but couldn't see it, although we knew it was close. I thought it might have been under the car, and when I opened the bonnet, I thought I might be able to see better. but he just sat there on the engine, which was quite a shock. We were driving for half an hour, so he must have been really gripping on. The couple got in touch with Mr. Brimfield because his details were on Boris's collar, which he had only just bought for the cat. He said, "A couple of weeks ago, I opened my front door and there was a dying cat on the doorstep. I took it to the vet, but he said there was no way of knowing who the owner was because it wasn't microchipped and there was no collar. So I thought I'd better go out and buy a collar for Boris and my other cat, Pancake. And it's paid off." And there is another photograph, a more engaging photograph of Boris being held up. This time, he's not only looking straight to camera, but his mouth is wide open and he's probably saying, "What do you mean, Wurstband durch Technik?" Anyway, a lovely story.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. So now we're going to continue with death notices and Christian comment. And firstly, the death announcements for this week. Aldridge, Roy Frederick Aldridge, died peacefully at his daughter's home in Bath, aged 88. Cooper, May Esther Cooper, known as Maisie, died peacefully in hospital, aged 87. Endicott, Derek Endicott, died on the 28th of February, aged 71. Fuller, Ella Florence Fuller, died peacefully at home, aged 84. Harfield, Dorothy Harfield, died peacefully at home, aged 79. Poole, Thomas Edward Poole, died peacefully on the 26th of February, aged 89. Redshaw, Peter Sherwood Redshaw, died peacefully on the 25th of February, aged 69. Robson, Anne Robson, died at home on the 21st of February, aged 89. Roddis, Muriel Constance Roddis, died peacefully on the 23rd of February, aged 98. Rumbold, Stella Marion Rumbold, died peacefully on the 26th of February, aged 82. And Shay, Margaret Watson Lamb Shay, died peacefully on the 28th of February, aged 90. And now, Albie, can we have a Christian comment, please?
Yes, the excuse me. Christian comment comes this week from Rosemary A. Baker under the heading "Celibacy Back on the Agenda." After another sex scandal involving a senior member of the Catholic Church, questions are again being asked about celibacy. Is it realistic to permanently go without sex? Celibacy does not mean abstinence, which can be temporary. To the purists, celibacy, derived from the Latin for unmarried, means a permanent state of being without sex. True celibacy means a life without both sex and a spouse or partner. The subject is back in the headlines after Cardinal Keith O'Brien admitted that his sexual conduct had fallen below the standards expected of him amid allegations of inappropriate behaviour. As a Catholic priest, he was expected to abstain from all sexual activity and devote himself to God and the Church's followers. Buddhist monks have a similar expectation placed upon them. In both religions, masturbation is regarded as a breach of celibacy. Catholic priests are all men, and while there are celibate women, typically nuns, much of the debate tends to focus on male celibacy. Many medical specialists regard celibacy as a totally abnormal state, as it goes against the biological drives of the human body. There is also evidence that ejaculation offers some protection against prostate cancer. Obviously, many people do manage to live celibate lives, but the argument is whether they should be expected to have to do this because of their religious vocation. Like many religious practices, it can seem strange, even alien, to those who do not belong to that faith or denomination. In particular, it seems odd when other denominations of the same church have a totally different view on the same subject. Cardinal O'Brien was himself very outspoken against homosexuality and the recent legislation on gay marriage, but had actually come out in favour of priests being allowed to marry. The fact that married priests from the Church of England are being now accepted as Catholic priests is also seen as an anomaly. This shows it is not actually an intrinsic belief of the Church, but one of its laws. There is the argument that celibacy leads to sexual dysfunction or abuse, but actually there is no evidence that this is actually the case. The problem may be that people and priests are trying to be celibate for the wrong reasons. For example, becoming priests because they do not want to admit to their homosexuality or possible other sexual deviancy. For me, the problem is how a man of God can have lived with the knowledge he was guilty and waited until now to admit it, and what this says of the Christian Church to non-believers.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you're going to start us off.
Headed, How Dedication and Determination Saved Two Treasures, from Phil Yates in Tower Street, Winchester. Sir, regarding Balgarram's gripe about the Hockley Viaduct, the Chronicle on February the 28th, it would have been a good idea to rebuild the railway bridge over Five Bridges Road and continue the pathway along the route of the rail track to connect with Bar End Park and Ride, built on the site of the goods yard, but this would have been a costly exercise. However, one can join the path over the Garnier Road Bridge, which has been laid out on the original track. More important is the erection of a footbridge from the South Park and Ride over the busy road to connect with the new path leading to the viaduct. I don't think that Arnold Jarman's suggestion of a nicely designed cafe at Five Bridges Road or Garnier Road would be a money spinner. If at all, the Park and Ride would be a better location with all the facilities required now in place. I was privileged, along with other friends of the viaduct, to attend the opening ceremony. A few weeks earlier, on a bright January morning, I walked the whole route with two other friends into Domham Road, and on the way I reminisced how as a young boy I had watched the trains go over the viaduct and stood on the footbridge which spanned the goods yard, watching the shunting of goods wagons, mostly carrying coal from the Midlands, collieries, or beer crates from Burton-on-Trent. Two important Winchester structures were due to be demolished 40 years ago. The first, the viaduct, which was nearly blown up by the army, and the Theatre Royal, on the verge of demolition for commercial premises. Due to the sheer dedication and determination of small bands of enthusiasts, these two very important buildings have survived. I hope future generations will appreciate what their forefathers achieved in the late 20th and early 21st century. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Gary Honey of Northbrook Avenue, Winchester, and it's headed Selective Removal, in quotes, Nearer 90%. Sir, I note with interest the Wildlife Trust's justification for tree clearance on St Faith's Meadow, which has substantially changed the riverside in St Cross. It claims the Forestry Commission approved the felling of mature trees because the meadow is a site of special scientific interest, SSSI, protected by Natural England, a body keen to protect grassland habitat from shading and nutrient deprivation caused by leaf fall. I note the use of selective removal in the letter, although the reality is more of a clearance, with 90% mature trees felled. While the council is content to follow the Wildlife Trust's advice on conservation policy, it should be aware that their wildlife agenda is influenced as much by EU targets on wetland restoration as on woodland preservation. This is why we have Winnell Moors and will soon also have St Cross Moor. The conservation argument for swapping one ecosystem for another is flimsy, and residents have a right to expect the council to listen to their concerns, as well as outside experts working to quotas or national targets. The Wildlife Trust does indeed promote habitats of endangered species, as mentioned, but it often achieves this at the expense of other countryside users, such as dog walkers, many of whom vote for councillors Gary Honey, Northbrook Avenue, Winchester.
Now here's a letter from Keith Webb of Quarry Road, Winchester, under the heading "Illegal Assertion Must Be Challenged." Sir, your article "Moves to Stop City Rat Run," Chronicle, February 28th, reports that Andy Hickman, head of Access and Infrastructure, avers that 74% of motorists are illegally using the route through Simmons Street and St. Swithin Street as a shortcut, excuse me, and not to access the Square or Great Minster Street. Since when did the use of any of our roads become illegal? The concerns of NIMBY residents about traffic should have been considered when they bought their properties so conveniently positioned for access to the city centre. The assertion that this route is illegal must be strongly challenged. Comments made on the hoof by Johnny-come-lately council officials have no backing in law. In the 75 years I have lived in Winchester, I have never seen such a ruling. Wherever we live, it would be nice to have fewer cars and lorries passing our front doors. But that is progress, and forcing traffic along alternative routes would only increase fuel costs and pollution.
And from Mrs. Christine Hartridge, West Street, Hambledon, headed "Free Vote is Down to Individual Choice." Sir, re Mr. Chawner's letter of Chronicle, February 28th, referring to my own letter of the previous week concerning the free vote on gay marriage in Parliament, I quote Chambers' dictionary definition of a free vote: a vote left to individual choice, free from party discipline. Free votes are rare, therefore I believe that MPs should be able to vote according to their consciences, without the whips and other pressure groups hounding them. Historically, people have died rather than betray sincerely held beliefs. And regarding old-fashioned democracy, in the not-so-distant past, it would have been democratic to have included a new bill in the Queen's speech. Christine Hartridge, West Street, Hambledon.
This one's from Alice Reed of Mead Road, St. Cross, Winchester, entitled "I'll Carry On Being Politically Incorrect." Sir, singing in church a hymn we've known all our lives, not having to look at our hymn books, I wonder how often we find that the printed words are different from the lines we remember. The alteration, it said, has been made, quote, on the fundamental principle of the use of inclusive language referring to the human race, unquote. The perpetrators of these unwelcome alterations obviously don't trust the use of the generic term when man, men, or mankind appear. Even Christmas carols aren't safe. For example, "And man at war with man hears not" becomes "And warring humankind hears not," the love song which they bring. Another fundamental principle seems to be to eschew militarism. So no more "onward Christian soldiers marching as to war," but "onward Christian pilgrims, Christ will be our light." How uninspiring. Some hymns keep only the first identifying line, but are completely rewritten, so only the tune is the same. But perhaps the most irritating discovery is the alteration of one word only: "to dwell in lowliness with men." Oh no! "To dwell in lowliness with us." I shall go on singing the words I know in the hymns I love. I shall go on being politically incorrect. Alice Reed, Mead Road, St. Cross.
And now from L. Hall of Elder Close, Badger Farm, Winchester, under the heading "Newspapers are under no obligation." Sir, Roger Grewcock makes a strange comment in his letter, Chronicle, February 28th, accusing Friends of the Earth campaigner Chris Gillam of extremism. Mr. Grewcock states, "Once again, the Chronicle has confused the right of tiny minorities to speak freely with the paper's obligation to reflect proportionally the opinions of all its readers. No newspaper is under any obligation to reflect proportionally the opinion of all its readers. How could it possibly do that, other than by employing an opinion poll company? Expensive and bureaucratic lunacy. A newspaper's job is simply to report the news in a fair, accurate and balanced way. By and large, the Chronicle does. It also has a letters page to give space to the extreme views of people like Mr. Grewcock."
And from Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Winchester, headed "Recession Skews Housing Forecast." "Sir, the inspector's report on the Winchester local plan valiantly attempts to reconcile two conflicting aims. He was asked to consider if it was sound and in accordance with government policy. Unfortunately, no sound plan can comply, and no plan that does comply can be sound. In the South East plan, produced by the previous government, Winchester was to provide 12,240 dwellings between 2006 and 2026. The council later lowered this to 11,000, and then, to allow for the impact of the recession, extended the period to 2011 to 2031. The inspector has now increased this to 12,500. Of these, about 40% are to be built between 2016 and 2021, an annual rate of 1,000. Not merely is this much higher than in the prosperous years, 2002 to 2008, an average of 560 a year, but it is forecast, when national house building has fallen to half the estimated annual requirement, and the backlog is expected to continue growing until at least 2021. Real incomes are now no higher than they were in 2003, so that the loss of spending power is equivalent to 10 years' loss of growth rather than 5, and it is inevitable that it will remain below projections in the plan until the end of 2031. It is not just houses for the open market that will not be built. The City Council aims to provide 5,000 affordable homes by 2031, but the government has decreed that rents for these dwellings can be up to 80% of market value, which means that most affordable accommodation will not in fact be affordable to those needing it, one way of cutting the waiting lists. You do not provide affordable dwellings just to stick labels on them, any more than you can build real houses by putting numbers into a plan. Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Winchester."
"Diverting this road is a ludicrous idea," says C.E. Lovell of the Dean Ropley. No prizes for which road it is. "Sir, as a regular user of Andover Road to access the A34 and A30, I find the plan to divert this road through the planned new Barton Farm development ludicrous. Already in place, we have one of the best approach roads to Winchester and beyond. Straight, tree-lined and usually reasonably problem-free. Earlier letters to the Chronicle suggested keeping the original road with two roundabouts for access to the developments. This should be the preferred option. Kingsworthy is growing, and when the new estate is completed, its 2,000 family homes will equate to at least another 2,500 cars or more. With its pedestrian crossings, cycleways, 20-mile-an-hour limits and vehicles struggling to park, as lay-bys now seem a luxury, congestion and accidents are likely to result. Don't let Carla Homes deprive us of one of the best trouble-free road amenities. This is not progress, C.C. Lovell, the Dean, properly."
"Map makers make it hard for historians," is a letter sent by Michael Jarn of Step Terrace, Winchester. "Sir, read the recent Belgarum diary item on the 2012 edition of the Hampshire A to Z Street Atlas. Some readers may also have noticed that in both this and the new Winchester A to Z, the Silver Hill development is shown as having been completed. King's Walk has disappeared from the new edition, which shows the relocated bus station and new supermarket already in place. I wrote to the publishers about this in January and received an acknowledgement that this had been an error, which might yet need to be corrected in a future edition. On the same day, you published an account of the interesting series of talks on Winchester's past, 1871 and all that, one of which, by Giles Darks of the British Historic Towns Atlas, referred to cartographic error as a problem for historians using maps as source material. I hope this will not subsequently prove to be the case with the latest edition of the Hampshire A to Z.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Don't forget, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going to step back in time with some historical items, Nikki.
And from 100 years ago, 1913, at Winchester County Bench, Alfred Webb, William Towers and Frederick Seaver, all youths living at Chandler's Ford, were summoned for obscene language there on Sunday, February the 16th. P.C. Trent stated that in consequence of complaints, he hid himself where the youths of the village were accustomed to congregate and heard defendants commit the offence complained of. There were people about and the conduct of the lads had given rise to much annoyance. The bench ordered the payment of costs. And the second item. Sidney Young, dairyman, was summoned for being at such a distance from his horse and cart he had no control of the animal at Chandler's Ford on February the 24th. Constable Trent stated that at 9:40 on the morning named, he saw a horse attached to a milk cart proceeding along the middle of the highway in the direction of Winchester. There was no one in charge of it at all.
Oh, 50 years ago, 1963, good heavens. two items. The automatic telephone system comes into operation at Alsford Exchange on April the 25th. The Chamber of Trade, Mr. P.E. Burchett presiding, heard at their meeting on Monday. Subscriber trunk dialing will follow in the summer, depending on whether the Winchester Exchange goes on. The telephone service offered to send a representative to discuss the new system, and it was agreed to invite such representative to address the Chamber's annual general meeting on April the 26th. And the other item, addressing women members of the Winchester Conservative Association on Friday, Peter Smithers, Member of Parliament for Winchester, spoke of the great transformation that the country had undergone during the past 12 years of Conservative government. It is a tribute to the party that the achievements of this country in the last decade have been brought about by a reversal of the policies of a socialist government, he declared.
And now, 25 years ago, 1988. First item. The M3 inquiry is due to close on Monday, but the debate, one of the most contentious motorway sagas, is far from over. The decision of the Secretaries of State is not expected until the early part of next year, but the question is whether there will be yet another inquiry. Even if the department's route does receive the government's blessing, the Joint Action Group is committed to blocking the scheme and has already discussed the possibility of challenging such a decision in the High Court or European Court. And the second item, cat owners are warned to be on their guard for thieves believed to be operating in the area. Celia Brown of the Cats Protection League said an unmarked white van had been seen several times in the area, usually around the time a cat has disappeared. This seems to be a real worry, and the message we want to get across is that it is not safe at the moment to leave cats out at night, she said.
And there is an article on a historical item. It's from the Hampshire Chronicle, March the 6th, 1965. And it says, snow in March causes chaos, which is quite appropriate as they've just forecast possible snow next week. The only thing moving freely through Winchester on Thursday was the River Itchen, whose passage, unlike that of road traffic, was virtually unaffected by the blizzard of the previous night. The snowfall, which took many people by surprise, was the worst since the winter of 1963 and caused widespread chaos throughout the county. By Thursday morning, Winchester lay under a carpet of snow 6 to 9 inches deep. Hopefully we won't get that next week. And many of the surrounding villages were encircled by drifts of anything up to 10 feet deep. Snow ploughs were out in the main streets early in the morning, though many cars had been abandoned on the side roads and on the roads out of the city. Several luckless motorists, unable to climb the Romsey Road hill in their vehicles, spent the night in the police station. Although conditions were bad all round, the only completely impassable road was the Winchester-Petersfield Road at Chesford Head. The trains were running to virtually their normal timetable by the end of the day, but difficulties had been encountered with the earlier services, and a snowplough had been called from Eastleigh to dig out an engine stuck in a drift near Salisbury. Many householders found themselves without electricity on Wednesday night and for a large part of Thursday. And there's a photograph of the cathedral grounds covered in snow and quite a considerable coating of snow at that. So, as I said, hopefully that's not a foretaste this March. Now we're going to move on to Chronicle comment and first person. Nikki.
Which is headed Bedroom Tax, the devil is in the detail. It's hard to think of a more drastic recent government measure than the changes to housing benefit known as the bedroom tax. Hundreds of households on social security in the Winchester area, living in council or housing association-owned houses, face being hit with sizeable reductions in their income as a result of the changes from April the 1st. Under pressure to cut spending, the government argues it is unfair to pay public money to people living in homes too big for their needs. It says it has been, in effect, subsidising spare bedrooms. Put in these terms, it is hard to disagree, but has the government thought this through? The aim may be sensible, but the devil is in the detail. There have been many criticisms. Foster children will not be included, the needs of disabled children will be ignored, and it makes no allowance for households that have broken up with a visiting child to accommodate. And where are the smaller, affordable homes for families to move into? Where new taxes come in, people always find a way round them. There are many bricked-up windows of 18th-century houses in Winchester where householders subverted the hated windows tax.
A first person this week is written by Ron Allison and is headed Eastleigh Leaves Its Legacy. So the voters of Eastleigh have had their say, speaking when the political spotlight was on them for a by-election that clearly mattered far beyond Hampshire. While not in the sensational class, the win by the Liberal Democrats has nevertheless provoked more analysts, debate, forecasting and foreboding than is usual after such a midterm joust. And not only because the holders retained the cup, as it were, perhaps against the odds in all the circumstances, but because it was UKIP rather than the Conservatives who came in as the runners-up. The by-election had been billed as a test of which of the coalition partners would emerge as top dog, the result being used as an indication of what could happen in the 2015 general election. Instead, both parties saw their share of the vote drop, while UKIP recorded and rejoiced at an upward swing of nearly 20%. Labour's share remained much as before. Whether this will be replicated in 2015, no one can tell. If a week is a long time in politics, over 2 years is an eternity, especially when recovery still seems a long way off. Whether UKIP's vote is more substantial than a protest in mid-parliament is one of the intriguing post-Eastleigh questions. The Times made the point that in the 1945 general election, Labour and the Conservatives together won 86% of the popular vote. in 2010, they together took just 66%. The big lesson for the main parties, said the paper's leader column, that they are losing the trust of a large minority of voters, and their problems range far wider than one constituency in Hampshire. Is that true? And if so, will the lesson be learned? I make no case for any party or any one of the independents who stood in Eastleigh. I do argue, though, for involvement in local politics, be it ward, parish or constituency. Most commentators were impressed by the strength of the Liberal Democrats on the ground in Eastleigh, where they controlled the council and knew what mattered to those they met on the doorstep. They played it local, very effectively. Another lesson to be learned. As for Winchester, how sad to see so many familiar shops closing. Some had outlets throughout the country and seemed well established. The retail world is not one I know of, other than as a customer. But if closures are to continue at the present rate, someone will have to rethink our town centres. Of course, the high street or a bub bar or whatever the main shopping area is called, it's always evolving. When I first worked in Winchester, no one would have known what a phone shop was. And there weren't many coffee shops or charity shops either. Places do change, so to have some say in the high street of the future, we ought to get involved now in local politics.
Thank you. And now we continue with further items of general news. Albie.
Yes, this article comes under the heading Mix-up spoils mum's new baby joy. A young mum has told of the nightmare she endured with maternity services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Roxy Harris said it took more than a month to register her daughter Esme after clerical errors at the Winchester Hospital. She said Esme was mistakenly registered to another woman just hours after she was born at Florence Portal House on the 9th of January. Miss Harris, who lives in Gwynne Way, Wickham, with 22-year-old partner Anthony Dawkins, said the midwife came into our room and said she made a small boo-boo and that Esme had been registered under another woman's name, a woman who had not even given birth yet. We were told they would be able to sort it out in moments, but nothing was done before we went home, and afterwards I got a call saying it would take longer. She added the problem meant it took much longer to get Esme's medical notes and red book of her daughter's measurements. Then when she tried to get a birth certificate on the 24th of January, she couldn't, because Esme was still not registered as her daughter. Miss Harris, 23, a taxi driver, said it was not until February the 14th, more than a month after I gave birth, that I was told all the registration was correct. It made me very angry, but it was also scary. Luckily, she never left my side at the hospital. If she had, and anything had happened, I had no proof she was my daughter. If I had needed to take her to accident and emergency, they could have called social services because I was not recognised as the mother. If I ever have another child, I would go to Portsmouth. I'm never going back to Winchester. The Hampshire Chronicle asked for a comment from the RHCH, but none was forthcoming at the time of going to press. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of Roxy and her partner Anthony, and sitting on his lap is baby Esme, who doesn't look too pleased about what's been going on. She's got her fist clenched and she's poking out her tongue.
And this headed Check Cheers Charity. A Winchester charity is celebrating after receiving a rather special token of appreciation. Homeless Hostel, Westview House, has received a cheque for £1,380 from Waitrose as part of the supermarket's token scheme. Project worker Molly Edwards said, "We would like to thank Waitrose and its customers for their generosity. We've been overjoyed by the amount. It will really benefit all the residents who will decide what to do with it." Every month, the store in Stockbridge Road donates £1,000 between three good causes as chosen via Winchester Community Matters Scheme. Excuse me. At the checkout, customers get a green token which they can deposit in the box of the cause they want to support. Simon Aldridge, who has lived at the hostel for 4 months, said, "I had nothing before I came here. It's been somewhere stable to live, cook and eat. It's done me a lot to help me get back on track. We're all really happy about the cheque. We want to use the money to start a small business and go on some day trips together. Once you get people out there enjoying life, putting a bit more into life, they will get more out of it." Residents are no strangers to fundraising themselves. They raised nearly £1,000 for Winchester Basics Banks in the run-up to Christmas. And this also has a photograph of one of those enormous cheques you see pictures of, with Molly Edwards, the project worker at Westview, Keith Williamson and Simon Aldridge, who are residents, and Annie Cole and Heather Uden of Waitrose.
This has a largish picture of a smiling gentleman who is Den Plan's Managing Director, Stephen Gates. And there's a smaller picture of him with his a group of his also very smiling staff. The rather intriguing headline is, "Is the Silver Hill Scheme still fit for purpose? Should Winchester go ahead with the Silver Hill redevelopment?" That's just one of the questions the chairman of the Winchester Chamber of Commerce is asking in his new role, in addition to managing the challenging job of being boss of Winchester's largest private employer, Denplan. Stephen Gates, who is 46, Denplan's managing director, spent much of his early life living in Thailand, Holland and Belgium, as his father moved around the world working for Shell. After returning to the UK, aged 11, he eventually went to Leeds University to study geography and management studies. He said, "I enjoyed geography, but I was keen to get a job, so I also went for management studies. I'm sure there are an awful lot of very good geographers without jobs, so I think I made the right choice." After Leeds, it was on to Norwich Union, where he signed up to a 2-year management programme offering him a taste of every department in the company, from underwriting to the supply warehouse. He was appointed marketing manager at Denplan 17 years ago, and then managing director 11 years ago. It's now the UK's leading dental payment plan specialist. Mr. Gates said, "I've thoroughly enjoyed my time here so far and still do find it highly fulfilling. Part of that is because I think as a company we have changed continuously over the past 15 years and continue to change going forward. It employs 315 people at its Victoria Road base and works with 6,500 dentists across the country, including 15 in Winchester. It also runs dental plans for businesses like the BBC and Barclays Bank, as well as smaller companies. In fact, more than 1.6 million employees in the UK work for a business covered by Denplan. But Mr. Gates thinks Denplan should also move into other medical clinics after the success of working with vets. And it's not just his own business he has to think about, thanks to his dual role. The Chamber covers a whole range of businesses across the Winchester Council District, from agriculture to leisure, he said. "We represent the views of Winchester businesses to the people on the council when they have consultations going on. For me, it's a great opportunity and challenge to make sure we are representing businesses of all different sizes. It's been hugely enjoyable so far and eye-opening as well. because it involves talking about something much wider than just my day job. One of the issues facing Winchester is the proposed Silver Hill development, a £100 million plan to revamp the city centre with new shops, homes, leisure facilities and a bus station. But Mr. Gates said there were questions on whether Silver Hill was still appropriate during today's economic climate. He said, from the Chamber's point of view, what we are considering at the moment is whether what's being proposed is still required in today's environment. I'm not saying yes or no to that, but the situation has changed quite dramatically. When Silver Hill was originally proposed, it was during a buoyant economy. Is there a need to step back for a moment and make sure what is about to be built will meet our needs for the next 10 years, rather than going with what might have been right 10 years ago? He added that one of the goals was to ensure Winchester's rural businesses were not overlooked as the city evolves. Mr. Gates said Winchester must benefit from a mix of large chains and independent businesses, which it does at the moment. We have avoided becoming an identikit high street, but you also have a lot of rural businesses, and I think our goal is to make sure their voices are heard, and by networking with us, they are not isolated from the rest of Winchester.
Our next article is under the heading Pair Fined for Mistreating Pet Dog. Two dog owners have been fined after mistreating their pet dog, which was later put down. Winchester City Council prosecuted David Townsend, 40, and Louise Townsend, 36, of Bishop's Waltham, after initially being called to their home following complaints about dog barking last July. City Council Animal Welfare Officer Emily Bowen and colleague Sandy Goldman discovered a female adult Shih Tzu named Boo Boo left in a wire crate for long periods and who was covered in her own urine and faeces. Her eye had been removed due to a dog attack a few years earlier, but the wound had not been cleaned, looked after or checked by a vet. Vets decided it was in Boo Boo's best interest that she be put to sleep. The Townsends of Battery Hill admitted a range of offences, causing unnecessary suffering to their dog, failing to protect the animal from pain, suffering injury and disease, and failing to provide suitable accommodation. Fair and Magistrates Court fined them £1,000 each and disqualified them from keeping animals for 5 years. Councillor Roger Huckstep, Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for environment, said, "This case sends an important message for all to know that we will not tolerate animal cruelty."
Linda shows how simple changes can improve care, and there's a lovely photograph of this nurse, Linda. The infection prevention team at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust have found a simple intervention that can halve the number of cases of pneumonia. Project lead nurse Linda Swanson, specialist practitioner in infection prevention and control, presented a project to colleagues at a recent event in Basingstoke and North Hampshire hospitals. Hospital-acquired pneumonia, HAP, is a respiratory infection which occurs 48 hours or more following admission to hospital. It is usually caused by bacteria and is one of the most common causes of hospital-acquired infection within the UK, according to the Health Protection Agency. HAP can make patients very ill and can cause death in severe cases. Despite advances in treatment, the number of cases remains unchanged in recent years, suggesting that there are other contributory risk factors responsible for the infection rate and the often poor outcome for patients affected. Linda and her team decided to look at ways of reducing hospital-acquired pneumonia by using two simple nursing techniques, a 30-degree bedhead tilt and improved oral hygiene for patients on the acute medical wards. A total of 1,697 patients took part in the improvement initiative, receiving education, information, support and guidance from staff on the potential benefits of the project. The project showed improvements in those patients with tilted bedhead, with only 2% of them developing HAP, compared to 5% in the group who could not tolerate the bedhead tilt. The intervention was also instrumental in more than halving the number of HAP cases at the Hospital Trust and raising awareness of HAP among staff and patients. The data gathered from this project will be shared with colleagues, both in HHFT and the wider NHS, so more patients can benefit. Linda was recognised for her work at the Quality event for all staff, where she shared her innovative idea with other hospital staff and received the prize for the best presentation and quality improvement. Linda said, "I was delighted to be chosen as the best project. It just goes to show that a few simple changes can really improve our patient care."
To commemorate the refurbishment at St Margaret's Church, South Wanston, the Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend Peter Hancock, and the leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Ken Thorber, unveiled a plaque on Sunday. The work to the church, which lies on Hampshire County Council land at South Wanston Primary School, was carried out by the Council's in-house property services team. And the photograph against the plaque depicts the bishop in full regalia with mitre and crozier, holding a replicated plaque, probably representing the diocese, and Ken Thorber also with a plaque, presumably representing Hampshire County Council's coat of arms.
And now, very interesting article. Lift off for Derek the Space Teddy. He's boldly gone where no other Teddy from Hampshire has gone before, to the boundaries of space. There was trepidation about what would happen to Derek as he made his 20-mile-high journey over the skies of the New Forest. But the brave bear, wearing a specially designed silver suit, showed no sign of nerves as he was strapped to a helium balloon for his cosmic mission. And cheering him on was a small crowd who had gathered at the launch site near Minstead. It was part of a joint project by Toynbee School Science Club and the University of Southampton to observe how conditions change beyond Earth. An onboard camera recorded some unique footage of space and views of Hampshire as Derek the Teddy made his way to the edge of the Earth's atmosphere. Instruments also recorded surrounding temperatures as he headed towards the final frontier. His voyage is a combination of 2 years of painstaking work from the university's physics department, which has been working with Toynbee Secondary School. Derek's owner, Daisy Fox, a teacher at the Eastie School, feared he might not make it. "It's very nerve-wracking. We have him on a real time-tracking device. We're very nervous to make sure he gets back. He's a very brave bear. He's had lots of training and lots of preparation for the big event. It's just great that we can do something like this. It's something that the whole school has got behind," she said. In the end, he was parachuted to the ground after the balloon popped due to pressure, and he landed safely in a tree near Chichester 4 hours later. It was a chance for pupils from Toynbee to see science in action while students launched the balloon. Outreach officer for the University of Southampton's physics department, Kate Percy, said the children had been learning about what happens to humans when they enter space. And there's a lovely photograph of Kate holding on to the box with the teddy bear strapped to it in his silver suit and hanging down from the helium balloon, and all the children watching on. And for those who like to know about measurements, how high did Derek go? At 156 feet, he was higher than Southampton Civic Centre. When he journeyed past 111 metres, 365 feet, he was higher than St Paul's Cathedral. While the Empire State Building, for years the tallest man-made structure in the world, tops out at 443 metres, or 1,454 feet, at 8,848 metres, 29,029 feet, stands the world's highest peak, Mount Everest in the Himalayas. Normal altitude for planes flying between Europe and the United States is 35,000 feet. Beyond that is the edge of the troposphere, where no life can exist. This varies on weather, and whether you stand at the equator or at one of the poles, and is between 30,000 feet, 9 kilometres, and 56,000 feet, 17 kilometres. After the troposphere is the stratosphere, which ends some 51 kilometres above the Earth. Derek didn't achieve that height, but he did break the ozone layer, a region where the gas ozone O3 protects the Earth from some of the sun's more harmful elements, including radiation. This layer is mainly found in the lower portion of the stratosphere from about 20 to 30 kilometres, 12 to 19 miles, above the Earth. Concorde would cruise at about 11 miles above the Earth, within the stratosphere. And on October the 14th last year, Felix Baumgarten became the record holder for both reaching the altitude record for a manned balloon and highest skydive ever, from 39 kilometres, 128,100 feet. And there we are.
And back down to earth. Villagers to have say on church changes. Kingsworthy residents will be given another say on major changes to a village church. A parochial church council meeting last month approved proposals for a new forward communion table and audiovisual system at St Mary's Church. The £40,000 scheme would involve a fixed camera, drop-down screens and improvements to the wiring, heating and lighting. But Rector, Reverend Alan Gordon, said, Everyone on the church's ecclesiastical electoral roll would be asked if they were in favour as part of the next step of the process. He said, the Diocesan Advisory Committee, which makes a final decision, likes to see support from the congregation, so if the answer comes back no, then everything will fail. This is an additional element to the process that we have decided to do in light of the representations from the congregation who were unhappy with the plans. Several parishioners have objected to the plans because they felt it would harm the character of the 14th century church and disturb the peace and quiet.
Station area comes under development spotlight. The spotlight will be thrown on the potentially massive redevelopment of the Winchester railway station area. A meeting is being held to hear how the area around the station could change. Civic campaigners, the City of Winchester Trust, and Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINAC, are hosting the event for their members at the United Church in Jury Street from 6:30 p.m. The Chronicle revealed last year how developers see the area between Gladstone Street, Andover Road, Stockbridge Road and the Cattle Market car park as underused. The speakers are two local architects who will be suggesting ideas, David Ash of CH Designs and Paul Bulkley of SNUG, S-N-U-G, Projects. Mr. Bulkley told the Town Forum in November that the arc from the station to the cattle market was ripe for development, but that public benefit could be lost unless the City Council draws up a master plan to harness the ambitions of developers and make them pay for improvements in the public realm and transport. Most of the land is owned by Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and Network Rail. Mr. Bulkley believes that as the area is in a bowl, new buildings could be some seven stories high without imposing on the historic city centre. Several developers are said to be interested in building large offices aimed at attracting major firms. Railways in southern England are set for a huge boost when the line from the Midlands through Oxford to Hampshire is electrified by 2019.
Now an article by Andrew Napier under the heading Town's New Rugby Pitches Could Be Kicked Into Touch. A major investment in sport in Alresford could be in jeopardy after space purchased for rugby pitches was found to be too small. Alresford Rugby Club must start building the two pitches at Albury Park by June, otherwise it will lose grants from Sport England and the Rugby Football Union towards the £160,000 scheme. But the club has said that the 3.8-acre site set aside at Albury are too small, and it wants to use land earmarked for general public use. Town councillors are unhappy. The club has told it that the land that the council purchased for it last year is insufficient. The town council must decide if it is to help the club with more land to make the playing area big enough. The council meets next Thursday, March the 14th, to discuss the issue. Town Councillor Roy Gentry is angry that 5 years' work on organising the land acquisition from landowner Rodney Morgan Giles is now in peril. Councillor Gentry said, "We purchased land enough for one pitch and a small training area. Now the club wants two full-sized, international-sized rugby pitches. In January 2012, we sat down with the rugby fraternity and there was no question that 3.8 acres was insufficient. Last November, the rugby club, which seemed to have been asleep for 2 years, suddenly decided they wanted more. The RFU has refused to communicate with the town council, despite repeated requests from us for an outline plan." Mr. Gentry said he was unsure if the town council would support the club, and he personally doubted if it would be able to get the required planning permission in time to start before the June deadline. He added, "My view is we presented to the town council, the city council and the residents that we were going to purchase 3.8 acres and 3.18 for general amenity. I don't think we can go back on that position and cannot go back without another public meeting. I think the rugby club have let down their members, let down the town and let down the town council." Chris Day, rugby club chairman, said, "I am very disappointed and concerned Mr. Gentry has made these comments and refute the suggestion. The club has been working extremely hard with the town council towards the development of two rugby pitches within Alresford town." Club president Hugh Ogus said, "I dispute Mr. Gentry's version of events. He miscalculated the amount of land needed. We always wanted two rugby pitches. He was the only member of the recreation committee to vote against taking this to the full town council." In a statement, the club said, "The funding for the scheme is essentially in place, for which we must thank the Rugby Football Union, Sport England, and especially the Town Council. However, unless the project gets underway within the next 4 months, this is under threat of withdrawal. At present, the club, the Recreation Committee, and NATC, the Town Council, are in further communication with Winchester City Council, and we don't wish to upset these. A complicating factor is that the additional land that the club wants to use is only available on a 15-year lease, below the required 25 years that the RFU needs as a condition of the grant."
And on a lighter note, Ainsley's big surprise. Celebrity chef Ainsley Harriott was in Hampshire to celebrate the hard work of two Wickham Scout leaders. Barry and Chris Samways of 1st Wickham Scouts have worked hard to replace their wooden hut destroyed in an arson attack 6 years ago. Wickham CE Primary, which agreed to house the new hut on its land, hosted a surprise barbecue for the pair and Ainsley helped cook the meal, using ingredients from local shops, including Swanmore Butchers. Ainsley filmed the event for the BBC's One Show as part of its Community Champions series. Headteacher Mariah Ackland said, "Barry and Chris have dedicated their lives to scouting and were so upset when the hut burnt down, so we wanted to do something to celebrate them." And there's a lovely photograph of Ainsley Harriet with Swanmore butcher Carl Brzakalik and scouts Fiona Ward, who is slightly older girl with delicious-looking tray of ready-to-be-cooked hamburgers, and two very sweet scouting boys called Joseph Smith and Taylor Morgan.
Housing document flawed, says group. Campaigners have slammed a council document which will decide the future of a Winchester suburb. Last week, civic chiefs endorsed a planning framework, in quotes, that will shape the development of 50 new homes in Abbots Barton. At an unusually crowded housing committee meeting, Neil Townsend of the Abbots Barton Community Development Action Group said the document was based on flawed logic. He said, "We were promised by Mr. Tate, the city's housing boss, that the framework would address our concerns, and we're bitterly disappointed." He claimed that residents' concerns centred on three issues: that the report contained flawed logic, that it ignored the council's own policies, and that it ignores the concerns of Abbots Barton residents. "Winchester is lacking in green space, so it's contrary to your own policy," Mr. Townsend told councillors. But the city's corporate director, Steve Tilbury, said there was a manifest need for the housing, and that 85% of the green space at Charles Close would be retained, and 50% of the green space at Dyson Drive. "This framework is an effort to be transparent, so that proposals are not seen to be coming suddenly and without consultation," Mr. Tilbury said. Much of the controversy centres on the rejection by housing chiefs of scrubland surrounding a cadet hut, that's the Air Training Corps, as an area suitable for housing. They instead propose that it be used as a play area for children. Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "We do need some more affordable housing in Winchester, but what we're asking of the people of Abbots Barton is that they make a considerable sacrifice. I also feel we have failed as a council to answer the question of the cadet hut." But Miss Councillor Tate insisted, "It's highly unlikely that we would ever be able to get our own planners to approve that site for development," he said. "The plans are part of an overall programme to build 350 affordable homes over the next 10 years.
Now, changes at top for Winchester University. The University of Winchester has announced personnel changes. A new senior management team has been created, along with a new director for Winchester Business School. Former director of the business school, Professor Neil Marriott, now joins Professor Elizabeth Stewart as deputy vice-chancellor. Meanwhile, former director of finance and strategy, Simon Cowig, becomes assistant vice-chancellor and dean of the Faculty of Education, Health and Social Care, while Professor Joyce Goodman becomes pro-vice-chancellor. Professor David Burks takes over as director of the business school and new dean of the Faculty of Business, Law and Sport from the 1st of April. Professor Burks is a specialist in marketing research and fashion with more than 25 years teaching and management experience. Vice Chancellor Professor Joy Carter said, "This is a very exciting time for Winchester. Despite the rise in tuition fees, the university has continued to thrive. It is more important than ever that we have a strong leadership with a shared vision to ensure the delivery of the highest quality student experience. And there's a head and shoulders photograph of a windswept but smiling Professor David Burks, the new Dean of the Faculty of Business, Law and Sport.
And this is an obituary of Brian O'Rourke, perfectionist and pioneer of haute cuisine. Well-loved Alsford restaurateur Brian O'Rourke has died at the age of 82. He was born Forbes Brian O'Rourke on August the 9th, 1930, to Juliet and architect Brian O'Rourke. Eldest of four, he grew up in London and then aged seven at River Common in West Sussex, where he loved the freedom of the countryside. At 13, Brian went to Wellington College, where he developed a taste for boogie-woogie. After national service, he took up a place at Jesus College, Cambridge, to study agriculture, but after a year changed to read English. On graduation, he went to work for André Deutsch, but decided publishing wasn't for him, and joined Leighton's Wine Merchants, where he developed his love of good wine. After that, he moved on to the Leander Club, Henley, where he further developed his palate. During an earlier holiday in Lyon, Brian had been introduced to the wonders and flavours of French food, and he took an opportunity to work at the Savoy Hotel, where his culinary training began under the direction of Silvano Trompetto. He left to run the Golden Lion in Ipswich, and later the Rum Hole near Yeovil. Then, in 1963, he opened his own place in Pound Hill, Alsford, which became known as O'Rourke's. Brian was a perfectionist and pioneered haute cuisine in this area, and in the words of a critic, provided a rare touch of individual artistry. He gained a reputation for excellent food over 20 years and won many awards and accolades. Many will recall his Crespellinis and Pike Canal. In 1979, he married Anne and also opened an extension to the restaurant known as The Barn. It proved very popular, but the recession of the 1980s with extortionate interest rates meant Brian had to take the difficult decision to sell O'Rourke's. He began a new venture providing his unique dishes to shops, restaurants and for private dinner parties. This gave him more time to enjoy family, friends and holidays. He was an avid skier on the slopes until 3 years ago. Branda, who died of cancer on February the 15th, leaves Anne and their son James and his two older children, Nicholas and Lucy, and stepchildren Natasha and Dominic. And there's a very nice photograph of him as well.
Care home to be replaced by flats. Housing bosses have approved a £4.4 million project that will see a care home redeveloped for new homes. Victoria House on Victoria Road will no longer provide sheltered housing for the elderly, but instead form part of the city's new homes programme. Winchester City Council had already earmarked the site for closure on the basis that extra care tenants, elderly people living in self-contained homes with a legal right to occupy the property, should be upgraded from studio accommodation to one-bedroom flats. It was recommended that redevelopment go ahead as it will provide more new affordable homes and will be an opportunity to enhance the conservation area. Initial plans show the site can accommodate 30 flats with underground parking, and the council said a development programme will be submitted later this month with a formal planning application to follow later.
And now this article comes with a photograph of a very happy-looking Kate Bradbury. Comes under the heading, Kate comes full circle with legal firm move. A legal specialist has joined an expanding law firm near Wickham. Kate Bradbury will provide consultancy services for commercial law expert Graham Quar and Co. at its offices in Fareham and Petersfield. It brings Kate full circle professionally with Managing Director Graham Quar after working as an article clerk under him 25 years ago when he was a junior solicitor. Previously, Kate from Fareham was a partner at Warner Goodman's commercial office in Southampton. She said, "It's great to be working again with Graham and his team after 25 years. I've been reading how his firm, as a trusted advisor, continues to grow through client referrals, delivering results for them time and time again. As previously reported in the Chronicle, the firm was recently selected by TEAM, Britain's largest network of independent recruitment agencies, as its preferred advisor for its South region.
I'm one that I like because this is where I live. The living is easy in South Downs. People living in the South Downs National Park, which includes parts of Winchester, are among the healthiest in the country, according to new research. Data released by the Office for National Statistics said 51% of residents describe their health as very good, the highest percentage of all the UK's national parks. Although figures suggest people living in national parks tend to be older, they describe their health as better than those living in towns and cities. The ONS looked at statistics in the 2011 census, including age, health, accommodation, and employment.
There's a picture of three young guys, all smiling together, and they are rickshaw fundraisers. And just to prove it, there's a little insert picture of their rickshaw, or a, I suppose it's their rickshaw. And it's a kind of three-wheeled motorcycle with a sort of cabin on, built onto it. A group of Winchester supermarket workers are set for the challenge of a lifetime. Winchester Marks & Spencer employees, Tom Richmond, Callum Barnes and Ashley Portsoul, those are the ones with their photographs, along with a former employee, Tom Ray, will drive more than 2,000 miles across India in a motorised rickshaw. And they're going next month to raise money for charity. They aim to raise £4,000 to be split equally between children's charity UNICEF and Frank Water, F-R-A-N-K, in caps, water, which provides clean water in India. Mr. Sol, who's aged 22, of Highcroft Road, Winchester, said, "We've wanted to do something for a while for charity, and we're looking for the most adventurous thing to do. Then my friend Tom came back from travelling in India and suggested it, and we thought it would be great." Mr. Richmond, who's 21, of Victoria Road, Bishop's Waltham, added, "I cannot even imagine what it's going to be like in the rickshaw, which is only meant for three people. It's a driver and two passengers, I suppose. Particularly as we will all have luggage too. It's going to be tough, but we are looking forward to it." The four set off from Kochi on April the 5th and aim to finish in Shillong on April the 21st, driving for 14 hours every day and camping each night. They've been given time off by M&S, while staff have been very supportive, raising just under £500 towards their target. Mr. Barnes, who's 21, of Five Fields Road, Highcliffe, added, "We're all doing our own things as well after we come back, like I will be running a triathlon, so we can keep the momentum going and keep raising money for charity. We're even holding a bake sale, which might not be quite so tiring."
Now, under the heading Call to Arms to Protest Over Diverted Road Plan. Plans to divert a major Winchester road through the Barton Farm development has drawn more criticism from residents. Members of Winchester City Residents Association, WCRA, passed a motion strongly opposing moving Andover Road through the site, which would have around 2,000 homes. Developer Carla Holmes, which has outlined planning permission for the scheme, was originally going to keep Andover Road as it is, but amended the scheme to divert the road into the new estate after public consultation. The existing Andover Road will essentially become a cul-de-sac. Changing the diversion is highly unlikely, as it is part of the outline planning permission, and altering it would involve another potentially tortuous application. But residents at the meeting last Thursday said the diversion would be dangerous to residents, particularly children, despite a 20 mile per hour speed limit on the estate road and would increase pollution and journey times. Robert Wellbeloved of Orchard Close, South Wanston, said, "The entire area of Sutton Scotney and South Wanston use this road to get to Winchester, and so does Worthy Down. There's no earthly point or purpose of continuing this road through this development." Keith Story of St Cross Road added, "There are no benefits. It will cause pollution, increase journey time, and cause a safety hazard to anyone living in the area." The 30 members then passed a motion to publicly criticise the plans. It follows a letter to the Chronicle in January, signed by more than 100 people, demanding a rethink on Barton Farm. Carla has said it welcomes comments on the road, but has the council's backing to go ahead with the diversion. The City Council has also set up a Barton Farm forum for residents to discuss ideas on the details of the full plans.
Bishop celebrates church restoration, and we have a lovely photograph of the church and rather a lot of purple, that's all I can say. The Bishop of Winchester visited one of Hampshire's smallest villages to lead a special service. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, pictured above, leading the ceremony, conducted a celebration and rededication of East Stratton's All Saints Church following completion of a £200,000 restoration project of the Grade 2 listed building. The service was the culmination of 3 years' work by residents of East and West Stratton, who raised £40,000 towards the funds, which included grants from charities and English Heritage. Church Warden Chris Hilling said, "Given that East Stratton and West Stratton number only about 70 households, this was a truly remarkable achievement and shows what can happen when a local community throws its weight behind a project. The restoration saw repair work to the roof, tower and churchyard wall."
A controversial application to build a new super school in Winchester has been deferred, much to the surprise of people opposing it. The plans for the new primary school at the Westgate, which would provide 420 places and a 55-place nursery, were set to go before a regulatory committee on March the 13th, but the application has been postponed. Speaking for the group which opposes the plan, Paul Cooper, who's 62, a business strategy consultant of Cheriton Road, said, "We need to understand more fully the basis for the deferral. If it was to give enough time to review the fundamental options, i.e. build a single school at Westgate or expand the existing neighbourhood primary schools, then that would be a victory for common sense. I think if it is simply to try and determine more underlying data to support a flawed case, then I think it just represents a breathing space." It follows a site visit by the committee on Monday and a number of amendments made to the proposal on February the 28th, including parking for 40 cars in Chilbolton Avenue. Fellow Cheriton Road resident Chris Jones, who's 60, said, "We were disappointed to hear that the planning committee visited the site at midday. This is obviously away from the main morning and evening peaks, so they can have no personal indication of the traffic chaos the current school generates. Hopefully the extra time will give them a further opportunity to visit." The County Council was unavailable for comment at the time the Chronicle went to press.
Dental patients in Winchester could be about to pave the way to a new era in oral health. St James Dental Practice is one of 29 sites across the country to be shortlisted by the government to test a new contract for dentist National Health Service work. Some practices have also been trialling a new self-care plan based on a traffic light system, giving patients a rating of green, amber, or red following an oral health assessment. They are then given advice on how to improve their long-term dental health, focusing more closely on preventing problems before they arise. The programme started in 2011 with 70 practices, with a second stage launching in April this year. Barry Cockcroft, Chief Dental Officer for England, said, "I am delighted to welcome St James Dental Practice to the pilot scheme and know they will continue with the excellent work which has been carried out so far. This is great news for all the practices involved, as well as for patients who may be among the first in the country to trial the new ways of working. It's also great that staff in the practice can help lead the way for how dentistry will look in the future."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks also to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, who I forgot to introduce, of course, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.